is the Relevant Podcast.
It's episode 1027, and it's the Relevant Podcast here in Orlando, the frozen tundra, chilly Christmas time tundra of Orlando, Florida. I'm your host, Cameron Strang. Joining me from Loverland, Virginia, it's Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
From Austin, Texas, she's back. Podcaster, author, mogul, Jamie Ivey.
Hey, guys.
And from Nashville, Tennessee this week, still recovering from her bachelorette party, downtown Emily Brown.
Hey, y'all.
Well, it's the only reason to go to Nashville, visit Nashville, is bachelorette parties.
Right, right.
Going down Broadway on the Pedal Tavern. Yeah. So, you know.
I just joined them.
She just joins them. She's just a, she's a first. She sidles up. That's what she's doing. She's sidling
up. Some of those bachelorette parties, there's like 14 people in them. I feel like they could easily join it. They wouldn't
know. You just get in. No one knows.
No one knows.
Yeah, I know Sarah.
You're like, I'm the cousin. Yeah, yeah. I flew in today.
So it's sort of like a Wedding Crashers spinoff. It's Pedal Tavern. I could see this as like a Netflix, maybe even a holiday rom-com. Because I feel like the more little wrinkles in the plot, the better they seem to do. You know?
Yeah.
It's sort of like a holiday Wedding Crashers type of thing. On a Pedal Tavern through downtown Nashville, where you just crash a bachelorette party during the weeks leading up to Christmas.
Yeah, and then at the end of the bachelor party that you crashed, Emily, like one of the girls, she's like, I brought my brother with me. He's in town. And then y'all fall in love, and then the next is like a wedding. I mean, it's just, we got a whole movie planned out right there.
I love this. Can this movie be a reality?
Yeah. It's a reality show. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah, so... It's been, I feel like everything kind of blurs together in December, right? Like it is just a sprint to the big day. And as an adult, I feel like you don't really look forward to Christmas. It's more of like, what am I forgetting this year? You know, inevitably it's going to be something. I find that Christmas shopping gets more and more stressful all year, mainly because online shopping. And here's my take. Online shopping, it in your mind, you're like, I can wait another day. I don't got to worry. I can just do it all online. I can just knock this out.
Right.
Or back in the day, it was like, you got one mall trip. You know, it's going to be a long afternoon.
Right.
Wear some comfortable shoes. But you're going to come away just with the knowledge you got it all done. Online shopping has made me a procrastinator. It really stresses me out. Where do you guys stand on Christmas shopping? Is this something that's incredibly stressful to anyone else, or is it just me?
This show is coming out 6 days before Christmas, and I have bought no presents. So I'm a procrastinator, too.
Yo, I am a procrastinator, but I know it. So
I'm thinking about it. I'm making mental lists.
That's the problem.
The
problem, because you're like, I'll just log into Amazon one night, pop on a show, and just prime all this. But I'm telling you, man, you look at delivery dates, and the whole house of cards starts tumbling down. I miss the old mall days where it would just be like, no, I'm going to the mall one afternoon, just knocking it out.
Oh, that makes me stressful
Just go to the mall then. They still exist. You could just go down to Target or Best Buy.
I'm not comfortable in malls.
You're not comfortable in malls?
No, here's why.
Too many sword stores.
There's a lot of sword stores popping up. A lot of, you know, glassware, things like that. Just things that when they come to the mall, like weird wizard statues and stuff, you're like, the mall's going
on. It's like there's a clothing store for teen girls, and you know that used to be a Gap because they didn't even take the sign down. They put a vinyl sticker over it.
The sign looks kind of homemade.
You know?
The sign looks a little homemade. Like, you see homemade signs. You see like those stores with those weird collectibles, like a half life size, like Marilyn Monroe porcelain statue. And you're like, who's popping in there and dropping $1,100 for the Elvis statue at the mall? Who's going in?
They're coming in for other stuff in the back is what they're coming in for. There's another business. They run out the back of that store.
Like the James Dean poster with the little light on the motorcycle.
The light on the cigarette.
It's like, those stores are still around, but that's not why I'm uncomfortable. I actually like the novelty of those. And I like to walk in because it's usually the person that owned the store is working the cash register. Those aren't the type of stores that's hiring a lot of outsiders. Okay.
But there's a look of desperation. I can't step into those stores because you could make their day. Like, they can't eat dinner tonight if they don't sell something. So they're very eager that somebody just walked into their weird store. And I hate the fake browsing. I have to like do the courtesy, look around.
Yeah.
Oh, great. This is awesome. And then you have to do the awkward thing. thank you as you walk out, and they like, oh no, that was my one customer.
And usually their kids are in the corner, like watching TV, like watching like an iPad with their headphones on.
Yeah. And they're just looking at you like, please, please, please let this be the person that drops $800 on that collection of samurai swords. Rent is due. You know, I actually like walking in, just kind of milling around and checking out the odd collectibles that they seem to accumulate. Every one of those stores, if you ever watch one of those shows about people who won the lottery and like blew all their money and they show pictures of their houses, it looks like they did the entire decor. Like there needs to be a show like Studio McGee or like Chip and Joe, except the decorators only use weird collectibles from mall stores. I would watch that show.
That would be funny.
You know?
That would be funny. Yeah.
But either way, no, I don't like it because of the like kiosk. The kiosk, the proprietors of the kiosk are getting very aggressive. Like they would just straight walk up to you.
Very aggressive.
And start rubbing.
They'll start putting a curling iron in your hair.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or start massaging your hand with like dead sea salt. Now, I like a hand massage as much as the next person with salts from the Dead Sea. I just feel like, you know,
you want to be a consenting adult.
Exactly.
For that.
I want to consent to the massage. But do you guys find that it's very like even the remote control helicopter person, like they'll zip it right by you. They'll buzz. It's like in Top Gun where he buzzes the tower. I feel like they'll buzz in the food court right by your eye just so you look. Oh, is that a remote control helicopter? It's just getting too aggressive out there.
With the massive boomerang, and they do tricks with it and it'll right by you.
Yeah.
Yep. No, I agree. I actually have this very vivid memory when I was in middle school. I went with my friend and her mom to the mall. I can't remember what we were doing. And her mom was a very interesting woman, but there was someone who like came over, I think started like putting something in my hair, trying to get me to buy it. And I just remember her being so aggressive, like my friend's mom being so aggressive back and like defending me and being like, she doesn't want that.
No.
And that was really life changing for me because I didn't realize that you could be aggressive back to the kiosk people.
I thought you kind of just had to be like, right.
She really taught me that. And so like, and I just remember like, which is such a funny memory, but that was a really defining moment of like, oh, I don't have to just like awkwardly let this person put this product I never want in my life. Like in my face. It's a really big moment.
I've learned you have to do the wide berth. You have to like, if there's a kiosk hallway, you are basically touching the outer walls as you go down there and you're looking
and your eyesight's like
to the floor, or you're looking into the store. So like you do not acknowledge the existence of the kiosk.
Yeah. Don't make eye contact. And it helps to have a small child with you. They don't want to deal with, they have a small child with you, preferably crying.
Preferably sticky. Like make it
sticky.
Like sticky.
Yes.
Like, don't wipe their boogers for like a week before you go to the mall. Yeah.
Two quick notes.
Yeah.
I have to say, the wide berth, Cameron, bad strategy.
Why?
Oh.
Because you're breaking away from the pack. If you ever watch one of these nature shows.
Dude, I'm going to let the pack get assaulted and I'm going to make a clean break.
That's not what happens. The puma.
What?
The puma is tracking the herd.
Oh, they go for the solo one?
They go for the one that have come. You got to stick with the herd. Okay? Because they don't know.
In my experience, I'm at the mall by myself or with one other person. Well, I'm not in a herd.
Here's what you do. Okay. You engage eye contact, okay, from a distance, and you just look at them and go like this. Just shake your head no.
Just assert dominance as soon as you can.
Because
you're the alpha in this situation.
It's a courtesy thing. They don't want their time wasted. You know, they're there to move some Dead Sea salts. Period. Okay. If they know you're not in, they're not going to offer the hand massage. I feel like it's just a mutually beneficial social exchange.
Yeah. Okay. I like that strategy.
I waited too long to buy gifts this year, and a lot of people on my list are getting Dead Sea salts. A lot of hand massages on Christmas morning this year.
Are you going to go around and give your gift as an act of service?
No,
like they don't open anything.
Part of the deal.
That's a good idea.
It was part of the deal for such a massive purchase. I said, look, Christmas morning, I need you waiting outside to get some hand massages. He's like, okay.
The kiosk is in the driveway.
The kiosk
is in the driveway with a big red bow on it, like it's a Lexus, and everybody comes out and gets their hand massages.
Like 5/20, we come to your house.
December to remember. Remember the year that we brought the Dead Sea Salt guy from the mall? He's in the driveway. He's freezing. And he doesn't celebrate Christmas, so don't worry about him. And just come on in. Come on in. We're all waiting for hand massage. By the way, if you would have told me today that we're going to start off the show with an extended discussion of unsolicited mall hand massages, I would have said that sounds exactly right.
All right. Well, we have a great show in store for you today. Coming up later, we talk to Esau McCauley. He has a new book out that we're excited about. We also have your feedback at the end of the show. But stay tuned. Coming up right now, it's Relevant Buzz. Listening to Young the Giant. The song is The Walk Home.
The wait is officially over. Ann Wilson's newest album, Rebel, is out now. Following up on her Grammy-nominated debut album, My Jesus, her sophomore project is jam-packed with 16 songs and features guest artists including Chris Tomlin, Lainey Wilson, and Jordan Davis. Blending her love for God with her roots in all things country, Ann is a true rebel in modern music. Be sure to check out Ann Wilson's newest album, Rebel, available now everywhere you listen to music.
Okay, it's time for
Relevant Buzz.
All right, tell us what's happening at the intersection of faith and culture this week, Emily.
All right, we have some wild stories to get into.
Wild.
The first one I want to talk about is a megachurch pastor in Atlanta who said that he wants to grow weed on church property. Jamal Bryant is a megachurch pastor in Atlanta, and he was recently on a podcast talking about kind of what he plans to do to grow the church, no pun intended. And he was talking about how their church is the largest landowning Black church in America. So he asked his deacons, why are we not raising cannabis? And obviously the podcast host laughed because that is a very absurd thing to say. But then he like doubled down on it and said he wants to bring in people and introduce concepts of sustainable farming and how to preserve the ecosystem, teach them how to handle business. And he said that he wants to do that by growing weed. That is on church property. And there are a couple things we have issues with. We'll get into most of them later. But the one that I do need us to start with, marijuana is not legal in Georgia. So I don't know where... like why he thinks this is the best strategy to go with, but that's something that already is just an automatic no.
Is medical marijuana legal? Like you can get a prescription?
From what I can tell, no. Like you can't grow it, you can't sell it, you can't like use it.
So he said too that he saw it as an outreach opportunity, like to the young Black man who was like, wait, they're growing weed at that church? He's like, they'll come. I don't need to like try to get them to come to church. They'll want to come to church. That was his justification for it. And he also said that their church, which is New Birth Baptist, is the largest landowning church in America. So he was trying to like, how do we monetize our acreage? And this is his great idea. We posted this on our Instagram and the comments were wild. I loved the ones that were making puns like, you know, that church serves the Most High and watch out for the church. Watch out for the brownies at the bake sale sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say they have a lot of names if they end up releasing like their own strain. I mean, you could have Lord, I lift your name on high. You could right. have John 4:20.
That's good.
Okay, got it.
I just feel like there's a lot of options for branding.
Like all those Christian coffee shops, like Holy Grounds and all that stuff. You could do the same thing with.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It got a lot of mixed reactions. There, you know, I would say 80% of the relevant audience sees this as a problematic idea for a church. There were definitely a few. There were some people, though, in the comments on IG like saying, hey, good, do it. You know, I had no problem with it.
Well, here's my question. Like, let's take aside like the cannabis issue and just like if they were using the church property because I'm assuming they're not giving this away. Like, it's not like a community garden where they're just giving away the fruits of their labor. I'm selling it's a commerce thing.
If you know anything about Jamal Bryant, the man makes money. He is one of those pastors.
But that's more my point is like, let's put aside the cannabis thing for just a sec and just say like, it's any church that has facilities that they want to, that are probably those facilities are likely you know, facilitated by the funds of the parishioners, right? Like, should that be used for any commerce? If any pastor would be like, hey, I got a great money-making idea, I'm going to use the church facilities for a business, well, you know, no matter what the business is, right? Like, that to me is also offers its own. And again, I'm not making any kind of moral judgment, but I think in, you know, scripturally, there is, you know, a contentious relationship when it comes to commerce happening on, in that case, on, in the, like the, you know, the facility of the temple, right? Like,
I mean, but you got to look at the current kind of having a coffee shop in your lobby that sells coffee. The church has a line of merch and a merch table. I mean, it's getting weird and icky and gray area in a lot of church lobbies right now, you know, but that's a minor point compared to we're growing weed on the church grounds. Right. You know,
I mean, it is, but if you were to, but like, I do feel like it's a discussion that isn't had that much. You know what I mean? Like, what's the place of commerce on facilities owned and maintained by the church? Like, no matter what that commerce is, you know, I don't know. I feel like that almost to me is equally interesting. You know what I mean? Because you can come out with different sides of the cannabis thing. Like, you know, and there's, you know, different people have different opinions. And I remember years ago, Cameron, we ran a piece in the magazine where I got to talk to people on a lot of sides of that, you know, particular issue. But the issue of commerce literally within the church, not like in churches, I feel like is one that more people stay away from because there is some degree of gray area there.
Yeah.
I read a quote by him. I looked up an article. He said, the call is not to bring people to smoke at church. The call is to bring people to church so they can catch on fire. It's my intention that if we show young people the advantages and impact of urban farming, it will make a distinct difference. So I feel like he's kind of like muddling in two different ways. I love the let's teach people urban farming thing.
Yeah, but it's called organic farms. Right. I mean, you might maybe...
It's not a community garden.
Yeah, a lot of your parishioners live in a food desert. So farm the land and provide for the community healthy produce and make a difference in
but
health.
But when we throw cannabis in, it turns into something completely different. Whether it's legal or not in Georgia, I think it changed. It's just,
Also, another great name, Holy Smoke.
There you go. Yep.
Well, there's a Christian underground hip hop festival called Holy Smokes. But anyway. Okay. What's next? What do you have?
Another wild story that gives me the heebie-jeebies for a different reason.
It's crazy.
Can't wait. Yeah.
This is crazy.
There is a artificial womb facility is currently in the works. It's going to be called Ectolife. It was conceptualized by this Berlin-based biotechnologist. And essentially what it is it would take embryos and place them in growth pods or artificial wombs, which would be designed to replicate the exact conditions of a mother's uterus. So basically you could grow an entire baby outside of the womb.
So if we stop there, his rationale is this would be an option for couples who have trouble conceiving.
Yeah. Okay. Infertility
that,
issues.
Yeah. Great. Infertility wonderful. Issues. Right. Now go to part two.
What they also would offer is what they're calling an elite package, which would give parents the option to predetermine the characteristics of their child by genetically engineering the embryo before it's ever placed in the womb. So in theory, you could pick your child's eye, hair color, skin color, height, and even their intelligence level. And that is where things take a very dystopian turn, is just really playing God and saying, we're going to make our child exactly who we want or what we want them to look like, who we want. And it is terrifying that this is in the works.
It's in motion. And the plans for this facility would be able to birth 40,000 kids a year. FYI. Mm-hmm. So
wow. What?
Yeah.
I think it was 30,000, but still an insane amount. Because it's like the pod, I think there was like 400 pods in 75 labs. It's just,
it's wild.
I think there's a lot of things that we could talk about here, and I don't want to steer us off in a different way, but I don't have my head on straight and my thoughts organized well enough. But that number that you just said, 30,000, 40,000, whatever, a lot of thousand of babies to be developed.
Engineered.
My mind goes to how many children already are in our foster care system in America who don't. And again, I'm going a different turn here, but how many and it's not against IVF. I have plenty of friends. I don't have feelings about it, but it just makes me think like, oh my gosh, we're going to create 30,000 more babies, but we have hundreds of thousands of kids in America who don't have families. And that just, it blows my mind. That's my first thought.
Helping parents conceive is one thing. Right. It's the second part, the bioengineering that is like,
yeah.
Red flags times a million, you know, like who thinks this is a good idea?
Yeah. For any of us on here who are parents, all of us have biological children. I also have children through adoption, but we all have biological children. You already have this preconceived idea of like what your child's going to be because you know where your child's coming from. The mom and the dad, you know the personalities, you know what they look like, all the things. But what I've learned as a parent is like, everything's just up for grabs. Like, you know, like you can't determine like how smart your kid's going to be or how kind your kid's going to be or what they're going to look like. And so you're giving these parents super, super just like false expectations because we all created our children. And sometimes we still don't even know like, wow, that's a kind of trait I didn't see coming. You know what I mean? It just feels like you're going to put people up for like, they're going to feel like that's not what I wanted. I didn't check that box.
Yeah. It's not like you're designing a pair of sneakers online or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
right.
The customization, like the mashup of consumerism and consumption to a lot of different areas. I mean, we're talking about it with the church. We're talking about with, our ideas about the human life. I think anytime you kind of mash those up, you quickly run into morally problematic areas, you know? I don't think, you know, obviously it's not like there's anything overtly wrong with consuming things, but it seems like the consumer philosophy is infiltrating or has infiltrated a lot of areas that, you know, like I said, it introduces a high degree of moral complexity that maybe we just shouldn't allow it to touch certain things like our preconception of what human life is.
Jamie went foster care, Jesse went consumerism, and I'm going, this is this dystopian playing God of the human race. This is insane. And you guys are like kicking the tires on the philosophy around it. I'm like, they're making babies to order. There's a iPad menu of characteristics that you want. I want my baby to have blue eyes and be super smart and be 6'4". You're insane. This is nuts.
It's not okay.
I like how Cameron like described all designer babies as Dolph Lundgren from Rocky IV.
Hey, Hitler did it in 1938. That was his vision. He was trying to breed out the non-perfect genes in his mind. I mean, come on. This is bad.
You know, I'm glad we're talking about this. And we say this a lot on this podcast is that the church is behind in talking about things. And so this is a conversation that I think a lot of people in the church would be like, this can't really happen. What's going on? But actually it's like, I need someone to help me process these thoughts and like, how do I look from this from like a moral standard and ethical standard? And so I'm glad we're talking about it. And it just reminds me of like, add this to the list of the things that's happening in the world faster than the church can happening. Keep up.
That's
with.
What I'm saying. This isn't a philosopher saying by 2050, what if this was, he's actively pursuing it. It's in motion right now. So just know, church.
He was saying like, he thinks it's probably going to be maybe 5 years before it actually starts getting developed. And then he said it'll probably be 10 to 15 years after that before it really takes off. Just dealing like, he knew it would take a couple of years just to kind of educate the public on what this is and stuff. So it's clear like he's aware he has to change public perception of this. And my hope is that he is not able to change public perception and that people are not just going to think, okay, this is fine. Like that they'll recognize that there are still major issues with this.
You know, God, if we believe as Christians that God is the creator and he has an intent and a plan and a purpose for all of our lives, our strengths, our flaws, our characteristics were designed by him before the beginning of time. If we believe that theologically, we should have a problem with this. Okay.
Right.
Moving on. Okay. What's the last thing?
We're going to end things on a lighter note.
Okay, good.
We are really excited about the new Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse movie going to be coming out next year. We have the trailer.
First trailer just dropped. Here it is.
He wants to go out into the world and do great big things.
Not bad, kid.
And what I worry about most.
I love you, Miles.
Is they won't look out for you like us.
Want to get out of here?
Wherever you go from here, you have to promise to take care of that little boy for me. Make sure he never forgets where he came from and he never doubts that he is loved. And he never lets anyone tell him that he doesn't belong there. You gotta promise, Miles.
I promise.
Who do you think you are, really?
We are supposed to be the good guys.
We are.
I'm really excited about this. I was not excited for the first one when it came out, just because I
don't like good movies. Is that why, Emily? Because
no, it was because I didn't understand why we were getting a fourth Spider-Man movie within like the last decade. But then I watched it and I realized this is a different Spider-Man. And it was really good. Like the animation was good. The story was good. I was really excited about it. It's also been really sweet. I have friends that they have young children who they like. I'm thinking one specifically, like he loves Miles Morales, and I asked him why, and he said, well, because he looks like me. And that was really sweet. Like he will always grow up having a superhero that looks like him. I am really excited for this. It looks good and I have high hopes. Sometimes I try not to go into sequels with high hopes, but I'm going in with high hopes for this one.
When is the release date?
Summer 2023.
So we got a ways. So that's just our first look. We're teeing it up for you, audience. All right. That'll do it for Relevant Buzz. Make sure to check out relevantmagazine.com every day. We're covering the intersection of faith, culture, justice, and life. Lots of stuff coming out. Follow us on all the socials. We're posting over on IG a lot more now. Thanks. Stay tuned. Up next, Esau McCauley joins us.
Open my eyes, fall into cars in the middle of the street. Your tongue in my mouth in the door of a taxi. A CD dive bar with men who want you.
You're listening to The Greeting Committee. It's like at your church, the serve team. The Greeting Committee. The song is Anything But You.
Well, today's show is brought to you in part by Crown College, a boldly Christian and academically excellent college providing a lifelong, authentic community. Crown offers on-campus, online, and graduate programs, 18 NCAA Division III sports, international service opportunities, and a vibrant student life. Discover why Crown College is ranked top 3 in America for online Christian education. Visit crown.edu today.
Well, our guest today is Esau McCauley. He's an associate professor at Wheaton College and a contributing writer for the New York Times. He's also the author of books like Reading While Black, Sharing in the Son's Inheritance, and his latest, Lent, The Season of Repentance and Renewal. He sat down with Emily to discuss how the church can move forward in the next year toward unity and reconciliation for all. Here's our conversation with Esau McCauley.
But I am excited that we're talking about this because I feel like so many people either just don't get Lent or they just don't really have like a good view of what it is. So I think a really great place to start would be like kind of in your own words, how would you describe Lent and the season of Lent?
I mean, I think that in the beginning of the book, I say something along the lines of Lent is often perceived as this really dour time where you have to think about how horrible you are because of the sins you've accrued over the course of the year. And you just feel bad about yourself for 40 days. But I actually think of Lent as a tremendous act of grace that, you know, God in his providence has allowed the church to come to, because Lent presumes that you're going to mess up. Lent presumes that at some point during the Christian year or your life, you're going to lose your zeal. You're not going to pray as much as you should. You're not going to read the Bible as much as you should. You're not going to treat your neighbor as you should. It just presumes that we're not going to become Christian and ascend this height of sanctity until we die. This presumes that sometimes you lose enthusiasm. And so in the same way that like every year in New Year's is great because it gives you a fresh chance to start over, right? You can say, oh, I'm going to finally do these things I've been planning on doing forever. And you can do it without this sense of kind of feeling bad about yourself. And so Lent is kind of like the church's opportunity for people to say, okay, in the last couple of years or in the last year, how has my spiritual life gotten off track? And what kind of practices do I need to bring back again to restore the spiritual health? So I think of Lent as an opportunity. One of the things that Lent is an opportunity to recommit. But if it, but what I was saying, it's good news, is we don't have to pretend like we never have to recommit. We don't have to pretend like our entire Christian lives has been all Team Jesus all of the time. So that's one of the things that I like about the season.
But, you know, I feel like some people would argue that we should be doing that maybe all year long. So why is it important to have like a dedicated season for this?
Yeah, I mean, I would say to anybody who's married, you should celebrate your wife or your spouse all year long. But I'm assuming that on the anniversary, it's a particular moment, right? And so one of the things, and I say this as a former Baptist, and I attend the Baptist church now, that there is a tradition. There's a habit sometimes in kind of non-denominational or free church Protestant traditions to kind of say, we don't need to emphasize anything so we can do everything all the time, right? So we don't need to emphasize, you know, this particular season because we can do it at any point of the year. And I say, well, that's a false dichotomy, right? So Valentine's Day is one day, but it doesn't separate the fact that you can show those kinds of things all of the time. And so I think it's okay to say during a particular season of the year, we're emphasizing something. I think that we're excited about the incarnation year round as Christians, but we still celebrate Christmas. We preach the resurrection every week as Christians. We still have something called Easter. So those kinds of things, I don't think are in competition with each other.
American church doesn't love introspection. They definitely, I think a lot of them really enjoy deflection more.
Every semester when I start to teach a week in college, I say to my students, there's one or two things that are true. Either I'm a theological genius that have unraveled the mysteries of Christianity and I've gotten everything correct, you should just adopt my spirituality, or I've got something wrong and I don't know about it. If I knew what it was, I would change it, right? Hopefully, but I'm wrong and I don't know. It's a part of your job as a student is to respectfully to find out where I'm wrong, because I don't know everything. But it's one thing to acknowledge that. It's another thing for me to consistently seek out that correction, because I'm comfortable with the things that I believe. And I'm comfortable with the way that I live my life. And I need to be open to God consistently correcting me and showing me what I've gotten wrong. And I think that if we had that attitude as the church, then we might make some progress towards healing all of the current divisions that we're experiencing.
If we were to become, you know, a church that was a lot better at introspection and change, like, what do you think the church would then become like?
We might ask ourselves, how much damage have we done in attempting to do the right things in the wrong way? Paul's talking about the food sacrifice to idols, right? And he goes, you know, if it's a big deal to y'all, I'm not going to eat at all, because lest my eating cause someone for whom Christ died to stumble. So Paul said, I'm going to withhold some of my rights to do these things for the benefit of others. And I think that we feel currently as the church that the only question is who is right. I feel like in our vitriol, we're doing something that is damaged. I think that if we all took a step back, and this is not tone policing, this is not what I'm talking about. I'm saying, like, man, we seem to be displaying the hatred that arises from our disagreements with people spiritually more than we are displaying the love that Jesus produces in us. And so I'm not saying you run away from hard things or stuff like that, but I'm just wondering if we might reset how we engage. And I think 3 to 5 years ago, maybe 6, we just adopted the personality of the culture, both on the left and the right. And we fight each other like everybody else fights each other. And I wonder if there's a better way. if maybe the Christian virtues might be necessary. This is just doctor. This is just my own hobby horses. And so forgive me if that's not what you're asking, but I think that we as individual churches and denominations, just think about what we got wrong. We're so, I think everybody's so wrapped up in their brand. They're doing brand consistency as churches instead of like Christian introspection. Do we got to be on brand all the time? Or can we actually take every issue as they come instead of just saying, what's the most consistent brand identity? You know, we're always, you know, anti any statement about justice. So we're just going to call everything woke, no matter what it is, right? Like break up the monotony and like take on things individually. And so that's probably what I would say is the introspection might ask us if we haven't just settled into our predetermined roles set for us by the culture instead of listening to the Holy Spirit.
That was Esau McCauley. Make sure to check out his latest book, Lent, The Season of Repentance and Renewal. It's great. All right, stay tuned. Up next, it's your feedback.
Wish I could start this over.
Listening to The Rare Occasions, the song is Start This Over. Okay, it's time for your feedback. So last week we asked you for your favorite Twitter burns, like all time. Like we've all screenshotted them. That was a hilarious, like unexpected comeback, you know, whatever. Great little Twitter burns. You guys hit us up. You sent us the screenshots and I'm looking at them and I'm realizing this does not work for the podcast format. So we're going to skip it.
They're not fit for podcast. The burns were a little too sick. Yeah.
Oh.
A little too hot. Yeah. A little too hot. You can go look at our replies on the Relevant Podcast Twitter account. So here's the thing. This is our last question of the week of 2022. So I know it's in mid-December, but we have a weird recording schedule during the holidays. And actually, when we read the answers to this question, we will be in the first week in January. That's when you're going to hear your replies. So we want to ask a first week in January question. We want to fast forward a little bit and look ahead. So we want to know what your predictions are for 2023. That's it. What are your predictions for 2023? Hit us up on Twitter at Relevant Podcast, or you can also answer on the Relevant Magazine IG story where we post it. What do you guys predict?
Like predictions like who's going to get married? Who's going to win the NBA?
What pastor will fall?
Oh, we're not reading those.
Yeah, like what story are we going to be talking about at the end of 2023? Like,
right.
You know, I mean.
Yeah.
What we really need to do is keep a list of it to see which ones did come true.
Oh, yeah. Like, what's Jerry Falwell going to do next year? You know, like that. Like, where's that going to go?
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll see tweets, you know, or like something will happen or like news will break. And then someone will post like a tweet that happened like 2 or 3 years ago. That's sort of like.
Yeah.
Well, it's like The Simpsons or Back to the Future, you know, and back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll just watch some recent Simpsons episodes and that'll be my predictions for 2023.
Innovations, you know, how culture will change, whatever. What are your predictions for 2023?
Tech billionaires that purchase random websites that you frequent and interject a lot. Anything. Any prediction.
Anything goes.
If anyone can guess Elon Musk's next move,
that's
good. Impressive. Because I don't think he knows his next move.
I'm reasonably confident he does not. I mean, Emily, I'm almost certain of that. He seems to be shooting from the hip here.
Yeah. I bet good money on that.
His daily activity is like he wakes up in the morning, grabs the magic eight ball off of his nightstand, and shakes it to see what he wants to do that day, you know?
I'm telling you, it's like a Mad Lib. He's just like, ooh, what are we going to do today? And he just...
His daily planner is actually a Mad Lib.
He accidentally bought a Mad Lib instead of a real...
It's like you see parentheses. Large amount of money writes in $44 billion. Social media site. I'll just go Twitter here. Something that people will not like. Fire half staff. Okay, well, let me do this thing. Let me read the whole thing. Very smart... handsome billionaire spends 44.
Oh, that's great.
South African billionaire.
Whose child's name is XA Umlaut LP2Z. All right, so tell us your predictions for 2023. Well, before we wrap things up, I want to thank Esau McCauley for joining us today. Make sure to check out his book, Lent, The Season of Repentance and Renewal. Also, a couple notes. You know, it's the week of Christmas. It's the second to last episode before Christmas. You know, you might just be online doing some shopping, last minute shopping. You get bored, head over to relevantmagazine.com. A little breather. We're covering the intersection of faith, culture, life, justice. It's great. We're publishing a ton of stuff every day. Right there on the homepage, you can sign up for our daily newsletter. It's our top five trending stories sent to your inbox every morning. It's called Relevant Today. That's a great way to stay in touch. You can also follow us on all the socials. We're posting over there on Instagram, obviously Twitter, Facebook. And in the new year, TikTok is on the horizon for us. Follow us at Relevant on Twitter and Facebook, and at Relevant Magazine on Instagram and TikTok. All right, cool. On that note, we'll wrap things up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Jamie Ivey.
I'm Emily Brown.
We'll see you next time. Get your Christmas shopping done, everyone.
Listening to the Relevant Podcast. Check out our features, interviews, and news updates every day at relevantmagazine.com. And make sure to follow Relevant on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest. For more great podcasts, browse the shows on the Relevant Podcast Network, which you can find at our site. And while you're there, don't miss the all-new era of Relevant Magazine. A new issue releases every other month at relevantmagazine.com.
Popping in there and dropping $1,100 for the Elvis statue at the mall.
Relevant Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.